From MainePublic.org, I'm Barbara Caridi, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, September 22nd, 2016. And on this day, a new report warns that Maine will need an infusion of new workers, including immigrants, to achieve future economic growth. A group that tracks the nation's highway systems gives Maine's system high marks. And the debate over legalizing recreational marijuana has focused on law enforcement, but what many are most concerned about are the health effects of legalizing the drug. Those stories and more after this. This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and Kennebec Valley Community College, offering a late start semester beginning September 26th. kvcc.me.edu. I'm Barbara Caridi. A new report warns that Maine's economy will need an infusion of new workers, including immigrants, in order to achieve any future growth. Mal Leary has the story.
The report issued by the Maine Development Foundation and the Maine State Chamber is blunt. It says Maine faces a projected shortage of workers as more people age and retire. Over the next 15 years, the state will go from having about three working-age people for each retiree to about two working-age people for each retiree. The report says the worker shortage will extend to the service and healthcare sectors, to professionals and skilled factory workers. Yellow Light Breen, president of the Maine Development Foundation, says to fill those jobs, Maine needs to attract immigrants from other states and other countries.
We will need to attract thousands of additional immigrants to this state to have the workforce that will enable our industries to thrive. So that is a fact. It's not a belief or a perception.
Breen says the study is a continuation of its research into the state's workforce needs and challenges. The foundation's Ryan Neal says it will require a team effort to attract new workers.
Maine needs a coalition of business leaders to be front and center in this effort. This group can also work with other stakeholders to ensure that new Mainers are acquiring the skills desired by employers.
The report was released at the high-tech manufacturing plant of Kennebec Technologies in Augusta. The company's Wick Johnson says many employers recognize the findings in the report and will join in the effort to welcome immigrants to Maine.
Kennebec Technologies, along with similar companies in Maine, is in very, very serious need of a new blood and fresh ideas about employment.
But with immigration a hot-button issue in the presidential campaign, as well as at the state level, Breen says there are immigrants from other countries that may not feel welcomed, and that, he says, will have to be addressed.
Is inflammatory rhetoric helpful? No. So what we're here to be is maybe a counterweight to that in terms of a steady voice that says, let's pay attention to data.
Breen says the data show that many immigrants have the advanced degrees and skills sought by many employers, and that, he says, too much of the current rhetoric is based on stereotypes. Chamber President Dana Connors agrees.
I'm sure that they do, many of them feel unwelcome, but we're here to say that's not the case. So we're also here to say, to bring this sense of urgency to the impact it has on our economy, to try to embrace those who come to our state.
The report also encourages employers to take advantage of Mainers with disabilities and older workers who may choose not to retire. It says more efforts should be made to recruit veterans into the workforce. Breen and Connors say the state needs to start addressing the problem now, or future generations will suffer. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Meanwhile, a group that rates the nation's highway systems each year says Maine's is the fifth best in the nation. The Reason Foundation ranked Maine's system 18th 5 years ago. Maine native David Hartgen, a retired engineering professor at the University of North Carolina, authored the study.
They moved up for several reasons. First of all, they have made progress with regard to several items, and one of those is the percentage of deficient bridges. They're they're still above the national average, but it's come down quite a bit.
Hartgen says there are some weaknesses in Maine. He says rural roads need better maintenance, and many are still too narrow for today's traffic. Hartgen says Maine is a poor state without the resources to meet all of its highway and bridge needs. Down in Washington, a bill sponsored by Maine's 2nd District Republican Bruce Poliquin requiring the U.S. Treasury to publish information on Iranian leaders' wealth and how they're using it to promote terrorism has won approval in the U.S. House. The vote was 282 to 143. The Iranian Leadership Asset Transparency Act would publicize the assets associated with members of Iran's government leadership, Poliquin says, including the supreme leader of Iran, members of the Council of Guardians, and the top military leaders.
Their personal assets, how that money was acquired, and what it is being used for.
Under the bill, the U.S. Treasury would submit a report to Congress on the leader's assets. The report would also be posted on the Treasury Department's website in English and the three major languages spoken in Iran. The measure has not been scheduled yet for consideration in the U.S. Senate. Meanwhile, the Democrat seeking to unseat Poliquin in Maine's 2nd District, Emily Kane, picked up an endorsement today from a prominent Mainer. At an event in Lewiston, former Maine Senator and U.S. Senate Majority Leader George Mitchell endorsed Kane, saying she's, quote, on the side of Maine's working families. And in Portland last night, Senator Mitchell was praising another Maine politician, former Governor Joseph Brennan. Mitchell was among several hundred friends, family members, and political figures who filled the Maine Irish Heritage Center for the dedication of Brennan's archives. Brennan, who is now 81 years old, was Maine's governor from 1979 to 1987, and he also served in Congress. At the event, Brennan denounced the overwhelming influence of big money in elections.
The rise of money in politics is closely related, in many ways, I think, to the decline of incomes for working people.
Brennan also decried what he called the militarization of U.S. foreign policy. Senator Mitchell praised Brennan's political career and discussed the importance of immigrants to the nation's economic growth. Brennan's parents emigrated to the U.S. from Ireland. Coming up, as Mainers consider whether to legalize recreational marijuana, some are concerned about the health consequences of making the drug more available. In Bar Harbor, Jackson Laboratory is sharing in a $25 million award from the National Institute on Aging to support a new effort to combat Alzheimer's disease. The Maine Research Facility is working on the project with Indiana University. Jackson Lab Associate Professor Gareth Howell says the Alzheimer's Disease Precision Model Center plans to create new mouse models to test drugs to fight the disease. Howell says the funds will allow the facility to efficiently test in mice genetic variations that have been identified in humans.
To identify combinations of gene changes that will hopefully lead to an Alzheimer's disease in mice that is much more closely resembles what we see in humans.
Howell says, in addition, key therapies for the illness will be tested in the mice in a way that's standardized and can be reproduced. And as the debate over whether to legalize recreational marijuana in Maine continues, we've heard a lot about concerns related to criminal justice or economics. But for others, public health is the central issue. Some members of the medical community are concerned about the consequences of making pot more available. As part of our continuing week-long series, High Stakes, Patty White reports.
Poison Center, this is Victoria.
At the Northern New England Poison Center in Portland, phones ring around the clock.
And I'm sorry, what did you say the name of the product was?
Desitin. The calls run the gamut, from toddlers who accidentally swallowed medications or house cleaners, to teens and adults who've overdosed on various substances. And in the past few years, the Poison Center's director, Dr. Karen Simone, has noticed an increase in calls involving one substance in particular.
The problems that we've had in our local area, and they're similar around the country, are related to children not being able to tell the difference between candy that includes marijuana and candy that does not.
After medical marijuana became more accessible in Maine through a 2009 ballot initiative, edibles have become an increasingly popular way to consume cannabis. They're things like cookies, brownies, or candy infused with THC, the primary psychoactive ingredient in marijuana. But an edible can contain multiple doses of THC. So if an unsuspecting consumer ingests an entire marijuana-infused chocolate bar, for example, they could get a dose of THC that's double or triple the intended amount.
If, as an adult, I take that kind of dose, it could make me sick. I could vomit, I could get dizzy, I could have a very unpleasant trip that scares me. For a child, they can get psychotic, they can be frightened, they can see things, their heart rates increase.
According to Poison Control Center data, these kinds of poisonings in Maine have ebbed and flowed. In the years when Maine's medical marijuana system launched, from 2010 to 2012, the Poison Center got 73 calls. During the next 2 years after the system was in place, the calls more than doubled to 162. And Simone expects poisonings to increase further if Maine legalizes recreational marijuana.
I think if Colorado is any lesson for us, the emergency department every day will have to deal with this. So I think to say that it's not a big deal and it's insignificant is wrong. I wouldn't panic, but I do think in a time where we already have opioid issues, where we already have marijuana and alcohol issues, this is just going to be one more thing that is going to be making the lives of the people in Maine a little bit more challenging.
Colorado has seen a spike in marijuana-related hospitalizations since recreational pot became available in 2014. A report from the Colorado Department of Public Safety in March found that before commercialization, there were 800 marijuana-related exposures per 100,000 hospitalizations. In the year and a half after commercialization, that rate tripled to 2,400. But that uptick, says Colorado's Director of Public Health, Dr. Larry Wolk, may simply be the result of better reporting.
You know, people are more willing to be honest about whether or not they've used marijuana since it's legal. Whereas maybe in the past, if they came in and they were vomiting or dizzy or anxious, they might just disclose the symptoms, but not necessarily that they just consumed an edible 3 hours before or 2 hours before, you know, whatever it is.
And Wolk points out that it was out-of-state visitors that had the highest increase in marijuana-related hospitalizations in Colorado, 109%, compared to a 44% increase for Coloradoans. As for overall use, rates for kids ages 12 to 17 have remained relatively flat, with a 2% increase. Among young adults, use has increased by 10%. For those 26 and up, it's gone up 5%.
It's actually been, I think, at best a non-event, and at worst, maybe a little too soon to tell.
Wolk notes one positive outcome. Legalization has generated tax revenue to fund public health programs about marijuana.
And arguably, you have some more opportunities, I think, to educate and do surveillance and even research the potential negative as well as positive or potential medical impact.
But in Maine, the idea of legalizing marijuana doesn't sit well with the Maine Medical Association.
Our concern would be that if this sends the message that marijuana is harmless.
Dr. Brian Pierce, the immediate past president of the MMA, expects they'll take an official stance against legalization in October.
We all agree that it's harmful for teenage users. It's harmful in folks who are addicted, and it's harmful in heavy use. It tends to last in your system quite a while.
Part of the challenge with marijuana is that research has been limited due to its federal status as an illegal drug. But according to the National Institute on Drug Abuse, heavy use is linked to brain development and behavior issues in kids and teens. It's also connected to breathing illnesses and mental health problems, including heightened symptoms of schizophrenia and temporary psychosis. Even with these health risks, some Maine physicians support legalization.
My name is Dr. Michael Parker.
Dr. Parker is a urologist in Lewiston. He's clear that he is not a marijuana user. And even though he shares the health concerns of marijuana's effect on teens and young adults, he says that's associated with heavy use. Alcohol, he says, is much worse.
Why don't we go back to prohibition and stop the use of alcohol? I mean, essentially humanity has its vices, and this is really a minor vice that's been made into a major vice.
The way Parker sees it, Maine has essentially legalized marijuana already through the medical program. The state, he says, might as well take control of recreational pot as well.
And tax it and regulate it.
But regulation needs to be driven by appropriate priorities, according to Dr. Stanton Glantz. He's a professor of medicine at the University of California, San Francisco, and director of the Center for Tobacco Control Research and Education.
What we're seeing happen right now is marijuana legalization is not being driven by public health priorities.
It's being driven by business priorities, argues Glantz.
And the irony is, if you look at tobacco, which is perfectly legal, by having an aggressive demand reduction programs, we've been reducing the social acceptability of tobacco use, and use has been declining. In contrast, marijuana, which has been illegal, sees use increasing, and it's socially sanctioned.
Glantz thinks marijuana should be legalized. But if states are serious about public health, he says, they should simultaneously launch programs that reduce demand, modeled after the most aggressive and effective tobacco control programs. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
And in Portland, 36 juvenile herring gulls have been found dead in the city's Deering Oaks Park in recent weeks. But state wildlife officials say that's no cause for alarm. Judy Camuso of the State Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife says such die-offs are relatively common in wild birds, though they most often occur in remote areas where the public wouldn't be likely to notice. Camuso says this type of mortality is typically seen in birds that nest in colonies, including herring gulls, where contagious illnesses can spread quickly.
And it typically just impacts or affects the young birds because they don't have the same immunity, they don't have as much fat, they're not as strong as the adults.
Camuso says an initial screening indicates that the gulls were not poisoned, and wildlife officials don't think the die-off is caused by diseases such as West Nile virus or avian flu. Several of the gulls have been sent to an out-of-state lab for testing. Officials are asking people who see dead birds in the Portland area not to touch them and to contact state wildlife officials instead. And a bumblebee whose habitat includes Maine could end up on the federal endangered species list. Federal wildlife officials today made a formal recommendation to list the rusty-patched bumblebee as endangered. The recommendation was made after the Portland, Oregon-based Yerkes Society petitioned the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and presented studies showing that the bee has disappeared from about 90% of its historic range in the last two decades. If approved after a 60-day comment period, the species would be the first bee listed as endangered in the continental United States. The rusty-patched bumblebee gets its name from a crescent-shaped reddish patch on its abdomen. It's an important pollinator for crops such as cranberries, blueberries, and tomatoes. Federal officials say the bee's decline is caused by a combination of factors, including pesticides, climate change, disease, and habitat loss. And finally, here's meteorologist Paul Cousins with the forecast.
For at least the southern two-thirds of Maine, this summer has some really long legs to it, doesn't it? But that's all about to change within the next 24 hours. Rain will overspread northern Maine tonight, showers arriving late across western, central, and down east counties, clouds simply thickening up Lewiston, Auburn, Freiburg south, 45 to 58 north to south. A cold front will descend through Maine tomorrow. Across northern and western Maine, the rain will depart by midday with afternoon clearing. Central and down east Maine, showers ending by midday with clearing late. For southern Maine, just a mostly cloudy day and still warm with a few afternoon sprinkles. Wide temperature range, 56 north to 74 south. Saturday, a blustery, unadulterated fall day. Mostly cloudy north, limited sun, western, central, and down east Maine, mostly sunny south, 52 to 64 north to south. It will be cooler still, with brisk winds persisting Sunday. Mostly cloudy north, partly sunny central, partly cloudy south, 51 to 63 north to south. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for Maine Public Radio.
And that's the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, September 22nd, 2016. Robert Holt composed our theme music. Thanks to our news leaders, Keith Shortall, Susan Sharon, and Andrew Catalina, and to Mal Leary, Patty White, Ed Morin, and Nora Flaherty for their contributions. We'd like to hear your thoughts on the podcast. You can rate and comment in iTunes, or you can email us at tdim@mainpublic.org. I'm Barbara Caridi. For all of us here at mainpublic.org, thanks for listening.